As promised from Bromley with Love, the deep dive, not the one that I did after the, not the one I did in midweek where I thought I had to just do my own little monologue. This is the proper deep dive. A couple of people said to me, I think it was at the Bromley B game. Apologies if I can't remember who it was who said it to me. They're like, Mash, when are you, Pete and Cole, doing the first deep dive of the season? And I said I was always going to wait until the beginning of September. I know we only would have played four games. I know Wimbledon come to Hayes Lane on Monday the 7th. This has been recorded on Saturday the 5th. But I thought that August and reviewing August was the right time for us to collectively show our faces on the platform and deep dive into the first four games of the season. At the time of recording, Bromley are in the relegation zone. I know it's only four games, people. I know. I'm just trying to trigger people. Bromley are in the relegation zone, 21st with 4 points, largely because of actually those hammerings, which have decimated our goal difference, which is why we're actually in 21st at this moment in time. But it's 4 points, 4 points from four played. And by now, actually, there's been loads of you subscribed in the last month. I looked earlier today, 220 people have subscribed in the last 28 days. So big up to all of you, wherever you have come from. A lot of you I know have said we're Sheffield Wednesday fans and we just want to follow Bromley as our second team. Thank you. Thank you for the 7-2 beating. Thank you for the subscription. But on a serious note, Pete, I'll go to you first. How are you doing in general?
Yeah, not bad. I'm, you know, enjoying the start of the League One season in a perverse kind of a way. So onwards and upwards. It can only go upwards after the last two, really. We assume.
Well, we assume so. Cole, likewise, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you, mate. Yeah, I'm enjoying it so far. You know, it's kind of, you know, no one said it was going to be easy. So,
well, quite. But that, let's use that statement because four games in, 4 points. Just take that statement in and of itself. And I don't know, in your answer, you may say, and please be as honest and as raw as possible, because I know that, and I'm here to say that my opinions are not the right answer by no means. Everyone can have different opinions on anything, everything. Can you separate that stat, 4 points from our first four games, from the 7-2 and 5-0? Or can you look at the 4 points from our first four games holistically and say, well, what kind of return is that, given this is a new level, first time ever at this level? Where do you place it? I'll let you start, Cole.
Yeah, I mean, 4 points from four games isn't too bad a start for life in a new division. But obviously, the manner of the last two defeats would have anybody a little concerned. And, you know, it's been chastening, but I'm sure we'll learn from it very quickly.
Pete, can you separate it or do you think it's a fair return?
As Cole said, it's the manner of the last two defeats that kind of rankles. But watching your video from the other day, you pointed out that it was a similar story when Bromley went into League Two. Started well and then had a real tough run where they had to learn the division. And Bromley are going to have to learn this division. But right now, they are making they seem to be wanting to learn the hard way, like giving teams too much space and too much of the ball, too many shots on goal. It's going to end in disaster. So they've got to learn how to balance everything.
Cole, and actually both of you, before we went live about 2 hours ago, I went and did some number crunching. And what you'll see on the screen right now is it the right order? Yeah, this is the right order. I think I'm getting the right order. These are the points total from the last five seasons in League One that you needed to avoid relegation. So 50 is last season going to the last fifth. When you get the mean from those five seasons, it is 46 points. Generally, if we take that as for granted, that 46 will, largely speaking, keep you safe in League One, the last two seasons notwithstanding, which show that maybe that isn't enough. If Bromley drew every, like, if we took the first four games and extrapolated that, we would end with 46 because we're currently averaging 1 point per game. Of course, we're not going to draw every single game, but let's just extrapolate it out. If we got 46 points in our first season in this division, Cole, and it either one kept us up or actually it just about got us relegated, how would you judge that?
Yeah, I mean, if it kept us up, that's fine. But my goal at the start of the season was 51 because I just wanted to make sure that we were definitely safe. I think I'd actually find it more gutting if we got 46 and went down. Just, I think we're capable of doing it. But yeah, I'm aiming for 51 because I'd be really happy with that.
Pete, we know that Andy Woodman has an in-house target every season since he's walked into this club. I've not mentioned it to him yet. And he never tells me. In fact, no, last season he did tell me what the in-house target was, and then eventually I think he started saying it in interviews. He hasn't told me yet what the in-house target is. I know he's certainly not thinking about just avoiding relegation. But if we, let me slightly change the question from what I asked Cole. If we stayed up with 46, would you see that as a successful season?
Yeah, I mean, just staying up, you know, if we stayed up on any number of points, you know, it would be a success in as much as I imagine that is Andy Woodman's minimum goal. Anything below that is an abject failure. From everything that you can glean from the way he speaks, he's not a guy who would just aim for the, oh, that'll do. It's, you know, he goes for the chimney. So, I personally would deem it a success, but I don't think he would. I think in his mind, he thinks he could somehow get this team to grind their way to the playoffs, whether that's realistic or not. But I feel like that would be his internal goal, would be, we're going to show some people here. But, you know, I think there's some lessons to learn before that can ever become a reality.
Cole, all three of us will have known, and in fact, any rational Bromley fan, and in fact, even the irrational Bromley fans, every single person surely expected this level was going to test us in ways we have never been tested before, on a consistent basis, that is. That said, in the first four games, has the level been harder than you thought, about what you thought, or slightly worse?
It's probably about what I thought. Actually, I think it came. I think we got away with one at Barnsley, but that was great. That was wonderful. Cambridge, the two teams are so evenly matched. And then Sheffield Wednesday were a level above. To be honest with you, Orient is the biggest disappointment of me so far because I don't think they're that much better than us. But it was just a really bad second half. But the quality itself across the board is pretty much what I expected of League One, really.
Do you think, somebody sent me a message, I think it was on YouTube, and again, apologies people, I get so many messages that I can't remember every time who's actually sent me what, but do you think, because I thought this was a good point this person made, but I'm intrigued to see what you both think. Pete, you can go first. Is it that, because I wasn't there, you were both at the Orient game, so this is why I have to ask you this question. Do you think the Orient game would have ended 5-0 if it was a week later? Like, is part of the reason why it ended 5-0, the catastrophe on the night itself, notwithstanding, is it also the fact that it was only basically a two-day turnaround from 7-2? So psychologically, once we gave away that second goal straight after half-time, do you think it was almost like a Groundhog Day for them where they're like, oh, uh-oh. What do you reckon, Pete?
Stop me if I go on a bit here, but I was in the East Stand looking right down in the incident that led to the second goal. And it was a crucial time because it was... So what happened? The ball went out.
Yeah, it did.
Right where the benches were. Both benches saw it had gone out and the linesman didn't flag. Now, you know, assistant referee must have not seen it or just thought it was borderline or thought the ball gruesome eyelashes that just somehow stayed on the line. I don't know what he thought, but the ball was clearly out to thousands of people standing behind the benches. He let that go. And from that, Orient took the ball, played through Bromley, you know, and scored. Now, the reason they played through Bromley is because a lot of Bromley's players stopped and were arguing with the ref, with this and that. They were chirping away. And then by the time they got their heads back into it, the Orient were pretty much already running off celebrating. And it was a soft goal to concede, but it pivoted on that moment. And when Bromley conceded so soon after half time, having done exactly the same in the previous game, I think it just sort of triggered a mechanism in there, that sort of, oh no, it's happening again. The heads went down, everything changed, the effort went down. It just, the atmosphere changed, because it suddenly just, this injustice had happened. And then the goal had come, and it was just this absolute gut punch. And, you know, everyone who was at that game, Bromley were in that first half.
Mm, I was going to ask you both that question. Were we actually, so go yeah, off, don't continue, Pete, answer yeah, that so for me as well. Was it, I know we were 1-0 down, but was it even-ish at halftime?
Yeah, it was even-ish. I mean, neither team could say they outplayed the other. I'm not saying Bromley were miles better or Orient miles better, but it was even-ish. And Bromley were kind of unlucky to be 1-0 down. They made their own bad luck by not chasing down. When the ball went out, Ben Thompson sliced a really poor clearance straight back to them, and they whipped it in. Great header, 1-0. But Bromley were in it, and they didn't give up. They just kept doing what they were doing, and they were working good patterns and moving the ball up the field quite well. It wasn't always coming off, but they were in it. And then that gut punch at the start of the second half changed the game completely. Everything pivoted on that moment. And if that hadn't have happened, I think Orient would have started would have been a bit more cautious. Bromley would have come into it, and I think it would have been a closer battle. I'm not saying Bromley would have won it, but I think it would have been a closer battle. But the timing of that goal right after halftime, after the injustice, just took the wind out of the sails and killed the game, in my opinion.
Yeah. Go on. Yeah, just before halftime, Taylor hit the post.
Mm. Yeah.
Genuinely, if that had gone in, like, you know, 6 inches to the right, and it'd gone in off the inside of the post, 1-1 would have been a fair reflection on the first half. I thought it was a really even game, but absolutely, as soon as we let the second goal in, everybody in the ground knew where this was heading, because you could just see the heads drop immediately.
Based on that, do either of you look ahead to, and this is kind of what, I'll come back to it again later on, but do either of you look ahead to the Wimbledon game and go, well, as long as we put in a performance like we did in the first half against Orient, second half versus, basically put together a 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Because the actual reality is we haven't really put together a 90 minutes yet this season, because Barnsley was a lot of heroic grafting, and we got our just rewards for it, but Barnsley can rightly turn around and go, hold on, how did you lot get the 3 points in that one? The minimum Barnsley should have got probably was a point. They didn't. That's how it goes in football sometimes, right? But we're yet to put together, let's not ask for 90 minutes, let's say 75 minutes of a strong performance, right? If we can put together the Orient first half, Cambridge second half, would you expect us to win? Or certainly not lose on Monday?
Definitely not lose. And I would take that. A performance is what we're looking for on Monday. You know, even if we didn't win, if we come off at the end of the game thinking, you know what, everybody out there gave everything, we were just a little bit unlucky, that's acceptable. No one's demanding that we thrash everybody and knock everybody out of sight. But I think the performance is important, and obviously a point would be great, just to and not conceding a huge amount of goals. You know, if we can keep it tight, I think people would accept that on Monday without a doubt.
Which links to this notion of the Bromley DNA. For the first time since Andy Woodman walked into the club, people are questioning the DNA. They're questioning how we set up. I think that's wrong actually, because I think there have been some fans which have questioned it in the past, but they've always had to begrudgingly accept that it works, even if they've not liked it, even if they think it's a bit agricultural. They've had to reluctantly accept and go, well, bloody hell, like, we won at Wembley, like, we got promoted, we won the league. I'm going to have to accept this works. This point ties in with my next point. I messaged two good friends of mine, Pete and Will, who I think you both know in different regards. And I said to them, have we flown too close to the sun? Okay. And I'm trying to link the two points together here. So I've had a lot of fans say to me, Mash, the DNA doesn't work anymore. Andy needs a plan B. And I'm trying to work out in my head, and it's a piece that I'm finishing up today. Look forward to that, Pete. There's a piece I'm finishing up today where I'm basically asking this type of question, where are we drawing the line between Bromley's DNA needs a tweak? I don't know if it does. I'm answering the question. Bromley's DNA needs a tweak versus, no, actually, this is the natural consequence of actually just flying too close to the sun. I said to Sue, I'm name-checking a lot of people. Apologies if you're a Bromley fan or not a Bromley fan who's watching this. Like, who are these people you're mentioning? These are just long-time Bromley fans.
Yeah.
I said to Sue recently that sometimes I look back at the last 5 years and go, Bromley have got promoted far too quickly.
Yeah.
And some of what I saw at Sheffield Wednesday and the highlights from Orient, the thing that I couldn't shake in my head was, we've got here too soon. And now, like with League Two, we at least knew that the National League and League Two, bottom 10, top 10, whatever, maybe the bottom half of League Two and the top half of the National League, we knew that whilst there was a leap, it was a familiar leap. Whereas with League One, I'm just like, And sometimes, I know this is a bit of a monologue here, I'm giving you both a lot to kind of come back at here. Sometimes I'm just like, but there's not much. We can ask for a minimum of graft. Yes, we can. But sometimes I'm looking at it and I'm like, yeah, but quality is quality at the end of the day. If you take that Sheffield Wednesday team, because I think a lot of people in that Sheffield Wednesday game, because of the margin of the scoreline, they've actually overlooked the fact of who Sheffield Wednesday actually have in their team. Even with the performance against Sheffield Wednesday, I think we would have lost on any normal given day as well, right? And just for clarity for those listening, Sheffield Wednesday are now top of League One, right? They just signed David Keller-Dunn, who 18 months ago signed for Wrexham for $5 million, right? So that Sheffield Wednesday team had Barry Bannon in it, Billy Mitchell in it, Louis Barry in it, Slattery in it, Jamal Lowe in it. And that's not to excuse 7-2, but there is a part of me which is just like, there is a natural quality gap that we're having to overcome, and not in like one-off FA Cup games, it's every single week.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you want to attack that, Cole, but how do you want to attack that?
Yeah, sure. I think with the DNA thing, the problem what we've got is right now, I think we're still in pre-season. We've got 17 players in through the door, okay? That's two-thirds of a squad.
Yeah.
So that's a whole new set of players who have got to learn about Bromley DNA, about how we play, about what it means to play for Bromley, because if you don't put a shift in, we get found out. Okay, that's the minimum requirement of a Bromley team is that, as Andy always says, we're the fittest team in the league and you have to work hard because we don't have the ball a lot. Okay, we're playing 70% of the game without the ball sometimes. So he's got to try, it's a really big job for Andy. He's got to try and bed in 17 new players into a style of play and an ethos and a way of playing, and they've got to buy into it. And if they don't buy into it, then they're going to be rotting in the B team, because you've got to buy into it, otherwise it doesn't work. So I think we'll be fine. I think he'll get that, and they'll get that working, but I think you could be looking to the end of October before we start to see consistent, what we would call Bromley performances.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned 17 players because that was one of my tabs, which I'd conveniently forgotten I hadn't actually mentioned yet. A lot of teams at this level, though, have got like 15, 16, 17. Like Sheffield Wednesday have got 17 new players. A lot of teams have revamped this season.
Ours are coming late, though. A lot of ours are coming since the season started.
Yeah, yeah. And I see your point. I see your point about how late it might be before, and not just get them up to speed with how Bromley play. I get them up to speed full stop. Yeah. In terms of, because Jody Jones now comes to us, and of course Jody Jones is a fantastic player, but he's had no preseason. Mikel Miller comes to us having, yes, trialed at some places, but he's not had a conventional preseason. George Saville has not had a conventional preseason. Dion Woodman and Chance Headman are having to make a leap up in terms of level. Camille Conte, yes, he's played at this level before, but again, it's having to make a leap up. We don't actually have, and this isn't me being critical of Andy Woodman and the backroom staff's recruitment, because at the end of the day, we're still only Bromley. We average 5,000. We're the smallest club in the league. And this is why I hate the transfer window, because we live in a world now where it's like, admin, tell us about a new signing. And I'm like, no, because you lot are expecting an influx of new signing, but Bromley are operating in a different playing field to what? Three quarters of League One, possibly more.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if people have seen the volume of players in and thought, okay, they should all be good, and lost sight of your point, which is we have to get them all up to speed, but also lost sight of the fact of we aren't in a position to get... Okay, so let's take Orient, for example. Orient signed Jayce Cabbia, who scored against us. I think he scored two. He scored 26 or 27 for Grimsby last season for League Two. Orient spent £700,000 on him. That's just one player. We're not in the same ballpark.
No. I'd loved us to have signed Dobra when he came off on Tuesday. You're like, oh, no. No, no, not him.
Pete, how'd you digest it?
Well, that's one of the things I was most surprised about in terms of the summer signings, was Andy Woodman, with his fixation on defence, went for untested sort of greenhorn defenders who need to step up a level, Chance Headman, so on and so forth, a Taylor. And that is the one area I think Bromley are now looking at, thinking, actually, we could probably use a bit more experience there. Because Omar, to be fair to him, is not playing at his best right now. He's getting bullied. He's having to learn at this level, and he's getting bullied, is what is my observation. That doesn't mean that can't change, but it feels like the defense needs more experience. Someone with, you know, championship kind of defending experience to come in and say, calm down, I got this. Because we had Byron Webster before that. Byron Webster was your calm down, we've got this guy. And now he's obviously retired. And it feels like that's the area that's missing. All the other players are nice, you know, a lot of, you know, attacking flair coming in, which is good. But if you're going to invest in the attacking flair, then you need to use it. And you need to find a way to use it. Because at the moment, Bromley style is that DNA question. Is, you know, how do you get the ball to those guys? How do you get around them, in and around them, to help them out? Because that's at the moment when Bromley get forward, there's this disconnect. They can't get all together and get moving together, and they're trying to move too quickly, or they're not. The movement they do is too not together, because there's 17 new players trying to gel and trying to work out what each other are going to do. It was noticeable that when Corey Whiteley and Cheek and all that lot came on late in the Leyton Orient game, Bromley actually started to connect some dots, because they all knew where they were going to kind of be. And actually, some of the best moves Bromley put together in the second half were because those guys were linking up and knew where each other was going to be. But, if Bromley had played like they did in the second half last season in League Two, they also would have got battered. That's how bad they were.
Right, good. And that's that. I'm glad you've made that point. And I that's what I'm trying to understand. How specific is what's happening in the last two games to League One? I do think Sheffield Wednesday, there is an asterisk there. I do think they are, I do think they will prove to be one of the strongest teams in the division. The fact they're first right now, notwithstanding, I think they will just prove to be, I mean, all of the bookies have them to end in the top six. They've basically recruited a championship side. So I do put an asterisk there to say, even if we played at our best, I think we lose that game. Leighton Orient, as I think Cole said, I know I wasn't there, but that one doesn't feel like it should be a 5-0 game.
They were good in the second half. They were fluid. But the thing, Bromley were either not picking up their runners or overrunning their markers and packing the box, waiting for a cross to come in, leaving players on the edge of the area to sort of then be led back the ball and being able to pick their way through. So that's my observation, is Bromley are overrunning their markers or not tracking them. It's one or the other. But Orient were fluid, and that is what got at Bromley, is they were leaving gaps and Orient were exploiting them at pace, and that was just, it blew them up, blew Bromley apart.
Let's return to this flown too close to the sun point. I'm trying to remember what the word or the acronym is. I want to say it's PSR, but I can't remember if that's the acronym for it, about the financial fair play. What I just want to say is the answer to this isn't just to keep going, well, we'll get some more signings in, because we can't. Financial-wise, we actually can't. And when the window opens in January, there will inevitably be talk of, well, if we are stuck down the bottom somewhere, let's try get some experienced pros. But we can't just keep adding, because the other thing that teams have to consider, like us, is if you don't stay in the division, all of a sudden now you're down in League Two with players on 2-year contracts at a League One level. Yes. And now you're really screwed. And this is why, when I kept seeing things like, admin, tell us about a new signing, I'm like, no. No. Because admin won't be telling us about new signings in League Two. So it is a very fine line to tread. And I think, again, somebody put on YouTube in the messages to the last video I did that, I think they expressed it, I'm paraphrasing, but the expression was basically Bromley's expectation should be to avoid relegation.
Yeah.
But there is no shame if we end up going down. And I actually, when I read that, I was like, yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think that's a fair enough way to look at it, because from an infrastructure point of view, there would be no shame. I'm not, and this isn't me trying to throw the towel in. I'm just saying, rationally looking at it, there would be no wider shame if push came to shove and at the end of the season it was a 1-year stay in League One. I'm not going to suddenly turn around and go, this has been a flipping failure of a season. I'd be like, well, we had a crack at it.
Yeah.
Because right now, where Bromley are as a football club, when all three of us were watching in much earlier times, we would have said that Conference South was our natural level. Then it got to a point where it was like, maybe the National League is our natural level. Right now, I'd argue that League Two is our natural level. And we are again playing above our natural, what I think is currently the natural level of football club. And of course, you can't sit still and you've always got to try and progress. But with progress comes more bumps. Mm-hmm. I guess that's kind of where I kind of want to just put a finito on that point. And I guess time will tell, ultimately. Let's see how we go against Wimbledon. Let's see how we go in the next month or so. Because for all we know, gents, those two defeats could have just been a blip. Like, if in the next five games we win two, draw one, lose two, or even win two, draw none, lose three, that's kind of par for me. If that's what we end up kind of doing across a season, where we're never really winning more than we're drawing or losing, it's kind of going to be, even if we do well, that's kind of going to be our season. Is that a fair take, Pete?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Bromley's DNA works and will work at this level. I mean, you brought up Lincoln in your last video, and I think that's a good one. And they're another club that probably League Two at one point was their level, and they clung on in League One, built up, and gradually got to a point where they could really express their, you know, strong style. And I think if Bromley can cling on this season and learn how the division works and learn how to play against teams that are, you know, on paper vastly better than you, well, they've done that before. And it's just that gradual build-up. But they've got some harsh lessons to learn. The DNA, I think it needs a bit of plastic surgery just to work out how to play from certain positions, because the temptation will be to go with like two holding midfielders and really batten down the hatches, Catenaccio style. But then how do you play out? How do you get out? Yeah. They're going to have to get so much smarter with the way they move off the ball to be ready, available for the pass, and so much smarter with those first-time passes to break the lines. Because at the moment, it's all a bit ponderous. It's all a bit, they're in their heads thinking, I don't want to make that, I'll be the guy who makes the mistake. Well, you know what? Be the guy who makes the mistake, but play progressively, play quickly, because that's the level. The speed of thought you need is upper gear.
Yeah.
So that's what they need to learn, and learn quickly.
I'm glad you mentioned speed of thought. I said that to a friend yesterday. I said that they said, what have you noticed about League One? And I said that the biggest difference, I said, it's not about how we've been, I said, there's lots of issues, how we've been defending, how we transition the ball. Whoever's playing up front was completely isolated, etc. Right. But I said to them, all of that stems to the issue of speed of thought. I've noticed that you don't, and rightly so, of course, because we've gone up a level, just don't have the time to think. Players have been harried into early mistakes. Their thinking time to make a decision has gone down by half, by a split second, half a second, whatever it might be. And as a result, again, I wasn't an Orient, but what I've noticed is we're stodgy. Yeah. Whether stodgy defensively, whether stodgy progressing through the pitch. And that's nothing to do with fitness, per se. It's just to do with, in that word you used about Orient, Pete, was fluid. I haven't seen Bromley be fluid at any point yet in these four games. Not because they're not trying to be. I think, actually, we're struggling. It's, what's that phrase? Economy of, I'm going to make the phrase up. I'm going to call it economy of possession, which isn't a phrase whatsoever, but we are going to have to get better at making quicker decisions with the few times we have the ball. Because we're never going to be a possession team. We're never going to be passing and moving and progressing the ball and popping people off the pitch. That's not us. It's not going to be us. But it does mean that the limited time we get on the ball, we have to make strong decisions. And Col, I don't know if you saw it at Sheffield Wednesday, but one of the things that stood out for me at Sheffield Wednesday was it wasn't even about how we were out of possession. Our decision making in possession was panicky.
Panicking
for no reason, just giving up the ball for no reason, because
turning into trouble as well.
Yeah, 100%. So everything has to go up a level, and that's why I think I've been at pains to say to people, I don't think it's as simple as bring this player in or bring that player in or slightly tweak this or slightly tweak that. Because at the end of the day, if you can't all make better decisions at a quicker pace, you kind of get ripped apart.
Yeah. The first couple of minutes at Sheffield Wednesday, we had a corner and I thought, here we go. Early goal from a corner. Get 30,000 on their back. This is great. Literally 5 seconds after we've not converted the corner, there's 5-on-2.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's only Shamal George making a really good save that we aren't 1-0 down in the first minute.
Yeah.
But all of us, and I just thought, because we were beyond the goal, and you just saw this wave of blue and white shirts coming up the pitch and two of our centre-backs looking absolutely overrun. I just thought, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I remember
this is going to be a long afternoon.
Cole, was... you and me both. When I saw that, I looked around in the press box and went, oh no. And then, because I think literally like 90 seconds later, their striker had an overhead kick.
Yes.
That George tipped over the crossbar.
That's right.
And at that point, I was like, sugar.
Yeah.
We're going to get taken there. And then they scored 90 seconds later. And I, do you know what it reminded me of? Do you remember that FA Cup game? I think you were there, yes. Cole. Do you remember that FA Cup game at Rochdale?
Yeah.
I think we got lost 4-0.
4-0, like, yeah.
It was like 3-0 in the first 25 minutes. I was like, oh, sugar.
It felt like every FA Cup game that when we used to go for about six rounds to get to the first round, and then we go to Fleetwood or Rochdale or wherever, and all of a sudden, after 15 minutes, we've been totally taken there. And it felt like an FA Cup game where we just were not at the level at all. And I thought, you know, it just felt like another one of those.
Yeah, 100. Listen, Pete, I'm going to wrap the show and I'll let you go first on this. So Wimbledon, who probably, I messaged one of my Wimbledon friends about 3 hours ago. And he was like, can you give your Bromley opinion? Because they do a Wimbledon podcast. He said, can you give me your Bromley opinion about the game? And I said to him, "I let me read it, in fact. I won't even paraphrase. I'll say verbatim what I said to him, and then you can riff off the back of it, Pete. This is what I said to him. I said, I'm just going to pick the bottom part. This shouldn't be the case, but it does feel like Wimbledon is a real litmus test of where we are. I shouldn't be saying this after four games, but I have to. I think most of the league expects both of us to be struggling all season long, and I suspect that both of us are actually in a mini league of 6 to 7 teams for those four relegation spots. So actually, this is an important game, even though it's only five games into the season. Hyperbole, Pete, or fair?
No, I think describing it as a litmus test is bang on, because it will... tell everyone connected with the club and everyone outside of the club as well where Bromley are in terms of their nearest competition. Because I don't, and I mean, AFC Wimbledon fans, you know, feel free to correct me, but I don't think anyone is expecting AFC Wimbledon to be anything other than sort of mid-table to lower and battling out for that. You know, they're not expecting a playoff push, but they're not. Their budget is similar-ish to Bromley's, bigger, but, you know, close relative to the
close level. Enough for us to be in the same ballish park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a litmus test, and Bromley need to have a, you know, Andy Woodman needs to have a really hard, big think about how he's going to set up. I hope they've watched the tapes. I hope they've looked at how AFC Wimbledon work and how to counteract that. But they also need to work on playing their own game and enforcing their own style on AFC Wimbledon. So it's litmus test.
Yeah.
Cole, and then Pete, because Pete's not going to get away from it. Name your team versus Wimbledon.
Okay, I did give this some thought. Jamal George in goal. I think I'd give Eiffel the right back slot, Mendy left back, Grant and Omar centre backs. Jones, if he's fit, to start on the right, Pinnock on the left, Saville definitely in centre mid with Hondemark, then Thompson behind Adebayeja.
Pete?
I would start Michael Cheek just because he's that battering ram, wears down defences, but they've got to be smarter at how they support him. I don't think Jody Jones is a reality at this point. I think they will probably go possibly with Archer again or Whiteley. I think Whiteley looked good when he came on the other night, despite the result. Then in the midfield, I would go with Conte and Hondemark playing ahead of George Saville, with a caveat that George Saville was blowing in the second half. That guy has not had a full preseason. He's not fully up to speed. So I think you need a plan B to be able to take him out of the game when his level dipped in the second half. In the first half, he was stepping into everything. He was getting right in the way of everything that that Orient wanted to do. Second half, when his energy levels were sapping, they were just walking through. So I would caveat that. Pinnock is a question mark. And that's the first time I've ever said that.
Mm.
I don't think he is anywhere near his best at the moment, but I think it's relative to the fact that he's perhaps not getting the support around him he needs to play his game. But I think also, you know, it's just that he's not playing as fluidly as he can. He's not playing as creatively as he can. So I would be possibly thinking about bringing Archer in instead of him, just to give him a bit of time to sort of see the game from the bench and then come into it knowing where the weaknesses are and coming into it. You know, that's my theory. Mendy, I think they need to give Mendy as many starts as possible to build his fitness up, test out those hamstrings. And Grant needs to come back into the side. Not convinced by Taylor yet. He goes through spells of looking really keen to then getting absolutely bullied by strikers he doesn't need to be bullied by. So he's just completely hot and cold. And sometimes it's chaos and sometimes it's very calm and collected. I think he needs to up his aggression levels, Taylor. They need to drop him in a couple of mosh pits in South London or something and get his you know, aggression levels up. And yeah, I feel keeps the right back spot. And it'd be interesting if Chance Hedman's fit to get him back near the squad again. See where he's at. So that'd be my team.
I won't be given a team. But thank you to you two for giving the team. Interesting that you mentioned Pinnock. I've had a few fans message me saying that they think Pinnock's off it. I can't.
Do you think it's because he hasn't got Idris behind him?
Ooh. See, I was putting it down to the fact that we can't even get the ball in the final third of the pitch.
There is that, yeah.
But I don't know if it... And also, I don't think anyone would have said Pinnock was off it if we hadn't put him at left wing back against Sheffield Wednesday. That disaster has meant that I think we're looking at him now through the lens of what happened at Sheffield Wednesday, followed by a suboptimal performance against Orient. Whereas before Sheffield Wednesday, some of the things that we're questioning, or some fans are questioning now, weren't necessarily being questioned before Sheffield Wednesday.
Sure.
Now, that's also, that doesn't mean it invalidates it, but I am saying that we have to be careful of how much scrutiny we're putting on things just in the prism of those last two performances.
Yeah.
But one thing I do... Go on, Tom Pete.
No, I think you're right. There's a bit of recency bias with that. But I think it also links into what Cole was saying. He hasn't got Idris behind him anymore. He's having to build a new relationship. He's not getting the ball in the right areas. Yeah. So I think it's a bit of all these things. I'm not saying he's off. I'm not saying he's got head loss. I'm just saying he's maybe not getting the kind of link-up play he needs to make his game work.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how many times, actually, thinking about that, how many times have you seen, possibly because we don't have the ball, but how many times have you seen Mendy overlap Pinnock, whereas Idris was on an overlap constantly not constantly, but you know what I mean? Like, you could rely on Idris to overlap or underlap Pinnock. We haven't really... But this goes back to my point about we've rarely seen the ball in the final third.
Yeah, no. But Mendy's been ponderous in possession and unambitious going forward on those overlaps, like you're saying. Mm. So he needs that, you know, they need to have a word with him and say, look, this is what we need you to do. Maybe play him some tapes of Idris last season. So do that, because he's perfectly capable of it. That's his wheelhouse.
Seen him do it at Wrexham. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, gents and everybody who's listened to this, that has been the first episode of the season of the Deep Dive. Plenty for you to get into there. Chop up and chew. Get in the comments. Let us know what you think. Like, share, subscribe, hype, hit the notification bell, all that stuff. We're very close. Believe it or not, people, we are very close to 1,000 subscribers. I think we're like 30 away. So let's try and get to that. From this video, who knows? Over the coming days, you'll see a 11 video drop, the usual write-ups over on FromBromleyWithLove.news. Go subscribe there as well. And Pete, myself and Cole, I will not be promising this season that we're coming back every 2 weeks. If Wimbledon beat us 6-0 on Monday, I'm shutting down the channel. So, that's me the deep dive. That's me the deep dive, people. And we'll see you all very, very soon. Thank you.